I'm excited today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Off-Centered Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Dockstetter, alongside my partner in crime, as always.
The animal stuffing midget moron from Ojai.
Chuck Testa himself.
A little bit soggy.
Yeah, it's a little damp outside today, but as it can be, it's either soggy or freezing or on fire.
No, man, we got...
That's the three temperatures of Ojai.
Yeah. Well, you know, like it's in the Army, they got two sizes of uniforms. Too big and too small.
Yeah.
That's the only sizes. But we got like 11 inches of rain already.
Wow.
And, whatever you call that.
We have a small visitor in here today.
We have a bonus dog that we're, shelter, whatever you call it.
Dog sitting. Yeah.
Hey, I got my, 10th armor jacket on today. I was gonna wear the DS's. That didn't work out.
Look pretty fancy.
Well, it does. See, I gotta get some miles on it. I gotta get some salt on this thing, and I don't, when I say salt, I don't mean like our salt.
Yeah,
I mean like it's too clean.
No, for sure.
And we're getting the Army back together, I found out on an email.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah, I may be going back to the front soon.
Nice.
Anyway, we got a great episode planned today, but let's talk about your week a little bit first.
Well, it was an interesting week. We took we were going to take a field trip, but I ended up taking a solo field trip
to Diaz's.
Yeah, we went up to Diaz's house and went through some stuff that he's getting rid of, and brought back a whole bunch of stuff that I need and probably don't need, but
we take it all.
Yeah, absolutely. We can always get rid of it later.
And we have to go back up next week.
Yep, we'll be going back up to get a couple more things that I couldn't fit in the pickup. We'll take the trailer up there and load them up, make life a little bit easier.
And so we're hoping to maybe do a podcast on the road.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of history I'd like to record.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of the association, especially since they lost whatever.
Yeah, well.
You know.
It is what it is. But yeah, it's as you can tell, we're doing a little series,
I
guess. Yeah, it's a series on the history of taxidermy. I know there's another podcast doing the same thing right now. But
there is?
Yeah, actually, Ashley Eve, she was one of the national champions from last year, Whitetail.
Really?
Yeah, her and one of her friends started a podcast doing basically the same thing we're doing. So we might have to do a swap cast one of these days with them.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing a big thing on the history, I think, last week or the week before going into. Yeah.
I don't want to give away all our secrets, but we don't have any. So Mike said Joe Kish would come on.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's the one you really need.
Yeah.
Because when we had the one going up today, Sam is correct on a lot of it.
Yeah.
But he was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
And he doesn't remember all of the exact players like Joe does.
Yeah. If you're a taxidermist watching this and you don't know who Joe Kish is, you probably ought to go do a little history lesson before you mount another deer.
Exactly.
There's a lot of us that, like we've said in every episode, I think almost, we forget the shoulders we stand on.
We're standing on his shoulders. Fuzzies and Frazier's and... Frazier was just really blessed how he, like, got that job at Joe. You know,
yeah.
I mean? Boy, he said he bugged the crap out of Kish, too, when he was, like, he paid him to teach him to sculpt.
Yeah.
And I don't think Joe knew what he was in for. I mean, he was, like, every night, right after work, you know, right to his door.
That's awesome. And, that's how it should be.
Kind of, I said, oh, Jesus, like I did to you. He said, yeah. He goes, oh, no wonder you didn't throw me out. You know, I wanted to sponge up as much information. The only difference was he didn't charge me nothing. But he did hit me with a board a couple times.
Yeah, well, see, that costs.
You know, but that's a wake-up call.
Yeah.
You know, so anyhow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, so today what we got on the, what do we have on the docket for today around here?
Well, since it turned out to me being the guest getter, I'm really excited for today.
Yeah.
Because we got a guy... And I know everybody knows who he is, but he's super, he's like the whole package in a way.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Really funny.
Mm-hmm.
He's really talented in a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Right? He's a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And most important, He's a Bigfoot enthusiast.
Absolutely. You may remember he was on I think our very first episode we did
together
on the Giggles. We're going to have Ken Walker back on with us today via telephone.
Yep.
And since we have the technology now, we can reach out to some of these people we had on before and
try again.
Yeah, revisit. So it's actually archived somewhere.
It is archived, but we don't even know if it went on, what the quality was.
Yeah, exactly.
All of that.
Exactly.
And I got some new questions to ask for him on that subject.
Well, good.
And we got a lot of ground to cover because he has a lot of announcements to make, which is really interesting.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I think it's great. And, oh, by the way, you know, he's worked in all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only red panda we got was that hide from the zoo that they butchered.
Yeah.
He got to go to China and mount one there.
Uh-huh.
And a real panda.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he was doing in Taiwan, mounting dinosaurs or something.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know. Kish went over there one time and made dinosaurs.
Well, there you
see,
go.
See, that's why we got to get it. You know, there's too much to do, right?
Absolutely.
Wait, I thought I had it.
Uh-oh. Hang on, no, we might have a...
No, we don't. Look, okay, so that's that. So I know the number. So who's that? Is that him?
You, allegedly.
Okay, so we're going to call the top number.
All right, hang on. Let me get situated here.
Oh, I see how it is.
Well, I got to unplug you so I can plug this in.
It's all fun and games when Chuck's messed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Chuck's going to get quiet for a second. This is going to get loud. All right. I'll put that between us so we can both talk.
Uh-huh.
Plug you in here. The top
hit,
one, you said?
Yeah, hit the top one.
All right, let's see what happens.
Uh-huh.
Nothing so far.
There it goes. There it goes. We just texted you.
Hey, you've reached Walker's.
We'll try again in a couple minutes.
Try this bottom one.
Go ahead. We'll try a different number.
I may have done a Chuck.
As you do.
Uh-huh. One's his mobile and one's the shop.
Good morning.
Hey, Ken. Morning.
Hey, Chuck. How you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Doing great. You're here with, you know, Matt Dockstatter.
Yes, sir. We've talked a couple of times. How are you doing today?
Mm-hmm. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, we can't complain.
Yeah, we're down here. If you get the news, we're washing away, you know, what do they call it? An aerial river or something? They got a new name, the Wokers, for everything, Ken. You know? So.
Okay.
So how you been?
I've been good. I was, it's kind of dreary at this time of year in Canada. You know, it's been gray and snowy and icy for so long. You know, by the time March rolls around, you're really done with winter, so.
Yeah.
But the guy could... Just got to keep myself busy so I don't, you know, just keep me on top of things.
Yeah, we got a lot of ground to cover today with you because you got a lot going on. Plus, I got a lot of Squatch. I just saw something on Stalin and the Yeti, so we got to talk about that. But let's get in there. We called the other day, and you said that you were working on a Wikipedia page, right?
Looking into it, yeah.
And that was because all your adventures, right?
Well, it all things sooner or later culminate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you start thinking about everything when you have a heart surgery. And you think, well, you don't know, it might culminate sooner than later.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Right. And then you suddenly realize you want to get things, you know, in order a little bit, right?
Well, yeah, and because I'm sculpting taxidermy forms now, you know, they basically sold on my name and reputation, so right. I have to find ways of preserving that, you know, because if something happens to me, my kids get those royalties.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
So I'm trying to be forward. You know, we try to be forward-thinking creatures, but we, you know, most of the time we have ourselves in the picture. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking yeah. forward, but you come to a point where you start have to thinking forward to a scenario where you're not in the picture.
Yes, I kind of understand that a little bit. You
yeah.
know? But you were telling me, tell our audience a little bit. I mean, those that know you, but you were going over all the crap that happened to you since you won $1 million, right?
I did.
In a lottery.
I did.
And then, and then you got. Wait, did you go to China after that or before that? Or?
Oh, no. I went. I think it was around the time of COVID, beginning of COVID. Well, it was spring of 2021 when I won the lottery from our credit union here.
Right.
And I went to China. Man, I went to China and a few years before that.
Okay, God, I see it. It all turns to, you know. Like, what's time to a pig, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Big Fur, that movie Big Fur came out, after I got divorced. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of when I started traveling, and the people from China.
Yeah, now I remember.
Brought
yeah,
me into,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I went to China to teach them the carving technique for doing, you know, some of the rare and strange animals that have in China, and focusing primarily on the panda bears when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do them for museums and whatnot. So I just showed them my technique of carving mammals and mounting them, and then they applied it to the critters that they had to supply to museums and expositions there in China. It's quite interesting.
Nice. I bet. Okay, so mm-hmm. then you did Big Fur, which, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it, it's a pretty good watch.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool movie.
It is. I gotta say, Ken.
You know, Dan made a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
He made a movie that kind of took the two subjects of taxidermy and Bigfoot, of all things, and basically introduced them to people who know nothing of either. In a way that was positive and accurate, you know,
right.
And simple enough that, you know, that people didn't, lose interest. And I thought he did a good job with the movie. I don't know how good of a job I did with my life story, but he did a good
well,
job
just
with the
SOP
movie.
For us taxidermists, dude. You know, highs and lows, extreme luck and extreme crashes.
Yep.
You know, no middle ground.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, no. Everything usually works out for me. Even if it's a bad story, I usually end up being lucky.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sooner or later, my luck will run out. But for now, I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on Deadpool where that woman came in and said, "Luck is a superpower." And he goes, "No, it's not." And yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, it is a superpower. I just saw a deal on our presidents. At war, which was interesting, and how fleeting or how lucky you can be. I got to put this in fast. He was on a bomber. He wanted to go on a bomber run, right, in the Pacific. And they're waiting on the runway, mm-hmm. waiting on the runway. So he had to pee. He gets off that bomber. It takes off. He gets on another one, right? The bomber he was on gets shot down. Everybody gets killed.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, luck.
Yeah.
You get what I mean?
Who was that?
That was LBJ, believe it or not.
Okay.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, there's been a number of stories like that, you know, like Eric Clapton not getting on the flight with Stevie Ray Vaughan, and
right.
there's been quite a few stories like that, and then people surviving plane crashes. I mean, Tucker Carlson survived a plane crash. I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, an airliner, like a commercial airline crash.
Wow. Oh, no shit. That's a big one.
Yeah, like I didn't, he just did a video on it, and it was one of the best videos I've seen him do because it was insightful, you know.
Yeah. Well,
talking,
nothing like personal true story from the guy, you know what I mean? That's it changes the way you think a lot, you know?
Most definitely.
I think Clint Eastwood, when he was young and in the military, I believe he survived a fighter crash, and he had to swim quite a ways back to the shore from the ocean.
Well, the point is, those guys were all cut from a different cloth, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
because of their experiences, and good or bad as presidents, it did make them into what, you know what I mean? At least they had an idea what's going on and life and death and all that shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. So, I agree. There's
Yeah, so then you did the Big Fur, and then what happened after that? I can't remember.
Doing the Big Fur was interesting because it got nominated for an award at a festival called Slam Dance, which is inside of the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh, no kidding.
In Utah. So, yeah, so we went there, and it was so much fun because we went there, and we were having quite a bit of fun. I saw quite a few celebrities, you know. I saw Ron Howard walking down the street, you know. There was quite a few, and it was really interesting. But what we did is we decided we were going to promote Big Fur, you know, like do some publicity stunts. So so we took the Sasquatch that I made out of, you know, the one that I recreated, and it was on wheels. So we rolled it up the center of the street, you know, stopped traffic and everything else. We got a lot of crap over it, but it was funny, and somebody come by and yells, you know, we're rolling this big Sasquatch model down the street, and the guy yells, goes, "What do you think you're doing?" I looked at him, and I said, "Guerrilla marketing."
That's funny. Well, we had Ron Howard up here, but that's because he came, this is hilarious, I might crack you up, Potsy was running for mayor of Ojai. Believe it or not. So Ron Howard came up here with the Fonz and everybody. Pitching for him.
Yeah, when he walked by me, you know, seeing somebody like that in real life, he was older than I thought, you know, like he looked older. And it was like, and the guy who was with me, what's his name? He worked for Big Fur Production. Anyways, he wanted to see a celebrity. He didn't even recognize him. We walked by, and I'm not going to stop and start pointing, you know? there was one guy on the corner, and he was shopping a movie idea. Like, you know, there's all kinds of these people. Like, he's got all these signs and jingles and jangles and things on them, you know, like, make my movie. I have a great idea, sort of thing. Yeah, he was a little half crazy, but you know, but you got to give a guy credit where credit is due. And,
right.
And I walked up to him and he said, "You're not going to believe who came by here." And I said, "Who?" He said, "Hillary Clinton." He said, "Hi." He said, "I didn't have the heart to tell him that was my Sasquatch."
That's funny, dude. That's hilarious. And didn't you get? Then after that, did you go to Taiwan or something, or what happened after that?
The movie came out and it did okay. You know, I mean, you know, people who watched it liked it, but it, you know, it's not something that brought in a lot of people. I started working for a company, they offered me a position in Hungary to train taxidermists for Eastern European taxidermists. The company's based out of Denmark, but the workshop was in Hungary. And a fellow named Karsten Skakabach, he called me up. And I just didn't want to take on another project at the time, you know. And I told him, I said, that, you know, I'd love to, but, you know, I met the guys at the European Championships in Salzburg. And you know, I said, I'd like to go, but I just, you know, I'm just going to politely decline. And so a few hours later, he calls me back. And he says, "Listen, Ken," he said, "we really want you to come." And he says, "I'm going to throw in a gold medal fallow deer hunt for a free-ranging gold medal fallow deer in Hungary." And so I kind of sat back and I says, "Well, when do you want me there?" But he was smart, you know. I like, you know, sometimes you have to defer to the smartest person in the room. Mm-hmm. Uh, and that's what I did. So I went there, and the hunt was an amazing experience, and I got to meet the guys. But I really liked these taxidermists so much. You know, so many people were, you know, calling them down and saying, oh, these Eastern European guys and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of pissed me off. So I said, no, these guys are as talented as anybody. So I decided to take the position. And so they gave me shares in the company, so I'm a part owner of it.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it's turned into the biggest taxidermy company in Europe now. And so, you know, they sent me to Africa. And so I went to Africa and I toured some of the farms that we deal with and some of the properties and concessions. And I actually got to hunt. And, you know, so I've been spending a lot of time going back and forth to Hungary and then different shows in Europe to promote. You know, we've done some taxidermy in the booths in, you know, the Salzburg and then in Germany, some of these big hunting and outdoor expos and, you know, dog shows for hunting dogs and stuff. It's quite a culture there.
Wow.
And so, you know, I really kind of enjoyed that. And the thing I liked about that is that, you know, at the time, after my divorce and everything that I was working on here, I didn't have a lot of money left over at the end of the month because I was able to, you know, my ex-wife was very good about everything and I was able to buy out her on my property, so I got to keep the farm.
Nice.
But political winds shifted up here, the economy went to crap, inflation started going through the roof, and I'm working 7 days a week wondering, you know, what am I going to do? Like, should I sell everything? Mm-hmm. And I almost did, but then I thought, you know, I'm not going to have anything to give my kids. I got two kids who mean everything to me, regardless of all my adventures and exploits. They're the two most important things.
Absolutely.
Well, now there's grandchildren, so there's, you know, it's growing. But so I decided to renew the mortgage, and I thought I'll just insure my life and everything, and if I drop dead, then they can all have it. And before I even made the first payment, I got this phone call from my credit union, and they said, you know, I thought they were phoning up to see how much I liked the service at the bank, which I really did. Their Service Credit Union in Alberta here is a great company. And they were really good with me. And so I'm sitting there telling this guy on the phone, you know, how much I like the bank, what they've done and everything else. And then, of course, I cracked a joke and then I heard all these people laugh. And I said, how many people are on this call? And the guy says, well, the whole boardroom, Ken. He says, I am the CEO. And I asked him the first thing I said is, am I in trouble?
Yeah.
You know, like I people call me, like important people call me for two reasons, you know. One, I've done something good. The other one's I'm in trouble. So I deferred to the one that made the most sense.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, he goes, well, he says, no, I love making this phone call every year. He says, are you aware of our big share contest? And my ex-wife actually works at that bank, and that's, I know all about it. They take from all the people they pay dividends to, because they're a credit union, they turn each one into a ballot. And out of $38 million they paid out, they have 38 million ballots, which roughly 500 of those were mine. And they pulled my name. And they give that person $1 million,
wow.
Canadian. So it's like 750,000.
Right.
Yeah, American, but still a lot of money. So... And the one thing people have to remember, a lot of people don't know, is all winnings in Canada are tax-free.
Oh, wow.
There's tax. Yeah, I had to answer a skill testing question, which is in the rules. There has to be some sort of skill involved. That's why they have this skill testing question.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, you know, answer that. There's a math equation, and I had 15 minutes and, you know, I kind of studied on how to do them. And so I got it right. So they deposited $1 million Canadian into my bank account, just like that. And boy, I'll tell you what, I canceled my renewed mortgage before I even made a payment.
Mm-hmm.
So because it was due. So, but my penalties were less than $2,000, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, that saved me a ton of money right there. That's being lucky, you know.
Oh, heck yeah.
And,
well, or a god
but,
shot,
I mean,
you know what I mean? Total god shot.
Yeah. But all my debts, you know, half of the money was gone, like, immediately because of my mortgage, any debts I had, I paid off, and then I gave each of my children roughly $50,000 gift. Wow. I bought my son a Tacoma. Deal. I paid off the loan on my son-in-law's and my daughter's student loans. And that worked out to be about the same. So, So I've been kind of living off of it. I haven't, they told me to put some in investments, which was, I wanted like no risk investments. Well, of course, I lost 30 grand right out of the gate because of the stupid economy.
Right.
You know? And then I handed my business over to my daughter. So I had to square up with the tax department, who I was having a running battle with because they're more than that nowadays, you know. There's like, they used to be just bureaucrats, but now they're corrupt crooks.
Right.
And you know,
we don't have time to even go down that road.
Yeah. So that cost another 30 grand right there, because I had to make sure that my daughter had the company without any problems when I handed it over.
Absolutely.
And I told them at the revenue service, I said, I'm not paying you guys anything unless somebody pays it for me. So they called me up and said, I thought you were going to pay if somebody paid for me. I said, I did. My bank decided to pay for me. You know, they didn't believe me. I tried to bet the guy another $1 million, but he wouldn't bite.
I still remember the picture you posted when you found out you won $1 million or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were smacking your head or something, you know, in that field.
Yeah, well, that was like, I got off the phone. My friend from Newfoundland, who was living here before he retired, he came into the shop and he said I was pure white. He thought that maybe one of my family members had died, or he was really concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he wished he'd have turned on his phone and videotaped me afterwards, because for a guy my age, I was pretty spry, screaming and jumping over everything in the shop.
I bet.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because when somebody tells you that you've won $1 million, mm-hmm. and somebody tells you you need open heart surgery like right away,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of the same feeling. It's weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I don't know how to explain it.
Jackpot, you know, right?
Yeah. Well, last year I just started getting tired. I went to Korea. I was working with one of my students on a gorilla at the zoo. She's Gina Yoon. She's a taxidermist who I trained with techniques.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. You did a gorilla?
Oh, okay.
You worked
well,
on
I was
gorilla.
Working on the gorilla. We,
right. So you're a gorilla man.
Right.
There's
gorilla
three
marketing.
Of us now. Me, you, Joe Kish, the gorilla men.
Oh, really?
I worked on a gorilla with Joe Kish for a university down in South.
Oh.
Here. So us gorilla men got to stick together, dude.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, go ahead.
Us knuckle draggers.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, but so I was down there, and I took my son with me. I like to take my son places because he's a policeman in a hospital, and he sees a lot of awful stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like to take him around the world and show him the marvelous things, you know, just to kind of balance out what he has to deal with.
Oh, heck yeah.
And so we worked on that gorilla, but then she went on leave, Gina, and she went on leave for a year, so the project abruptly ended. So I told him, I says, when you guys finish this, I'll gladly come back and help you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we climbed up to some Buddhist temples and things like that, but I noticed I was getting a little tired.
Right.
And then when I got back to Canada here, I got on my treadmill and something made me jump off the treadmill. I just thought, I don't feel like running this. And it just slowly got worse. And then I had to go back to Hungary. So I was there. And then I finally realized that something was wrong. And so they took me to a doctor. My blood pressure was through the roof. And they gave me medication. And I was having chest pains. And so they said that the chest pain should subside. And then I had to go on a hunt for small animals to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that it was actually getting worse. So I had aspirins. I was chewing them up, and my, of course, my kids are screaming at me to come home. And I'm like, no, I paid $9,000. I paid
one more animal.
I'm not coming home. So anyways, I flew back to Denmark and then back home and checked myself into the hospital. The next day, they admitted me. They didn't think I was too bad off, but they said I just described the symptoms a little too well. But when they did the angiogram, they found out I had 5 blockages in my heart.
Oh, wow.
And including the Widowmaker, I was on death's doorstep. So so I had to have the surgery, which I did, and then I had atrial fibrillation complications. So I was in there for a month, you know, and walking around here with a walker and a cane, it'll be 6 months on March 1st. My chest is still healing, but it's pretty much healed, and I'm back to, you know, exercising again, and kind of realizing every day that I have right now is time that I was awarded, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so strange that it takes that to change your attitude. Matt and I were just discussing that yesterday, why you wait to
Well, it does, and I have so many people concerned about me, and I was really worried. I didn't want people to be concerned because when I was 27 years old, I had what they call an NDE, a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. You'll every now and then you'll meet somebody who's had basically an experience where they died and then were revived. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we all have in common is we're not absolutely not afraid to die. You know, that fear doesn't play in. So actually, any fear at all, you know, the whole COVID thing to me was like the biggest scam in the world, because I don't give in to fear. I don't feel fear because I experienced something on the other side. And people can say they believe me or they don't. I don't care.
But
what I experienced was very real. And so we don't die. We kind of go on. And so I know this. I don't. It's not something I believe in. The whole fear thing, but I was more worried about the people who were worried about me than I was about myself. Last week, because of my situation, my brother, who's a very amazing musician and a country singer and bluegrass player, he had the same surgery as me, because I implored him to go and get checked out, and sure enough, he had developed a similar condition. So, I guess I could say that something very good came out of my situation.
Absolutely. Something always positive does, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but it always, you look back and go, if this hadn't happened, A, B, C, D would all be different. You know what I mean?
100%.
So,
there's people who believe in coincidences, you know, up the hoop, and then other people who say there are no coincidences. Well, I can tell you, if there are no coincidences, it's a greater plan, because everything worked out in such a way that if you couldn't avoid the situation and you had to get out of it, it couldn't have worked out better, really.
Yeah, and we have a saying that coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous. I know that's corny, but, you know, that's...
Yeah. I like that one. I'm going to use that. I'm going to steal that one.
Use it. People use it, but I believe it's the truth, you know. So it's not really coincidences, you know. It's, well, I guess maybe there is, but I don't know.
Well, of course, but, you know, the thing is, and this is, you know, hard for people to explain, like, I've met a lot of very intelligent people in my life, and, you know, I tell people all the time, I says, it's good to be intelligent, but there's only one thing that trumps intelligence, and that is wisdom.
Yeah.
And it trumps intelligence every time. And that's why you have so many of these highly educated college students come out of college with absolutely no wisdom. Mm-hmm. You know, they believe in things they shouldn't, and they're convinced of things that they shouldn't be convinced of in the name of, I'm smarter than you. Yeah. But it's not the case. You know, you want to know what's up, go talk to the guy who's been around the block, you know, a few times. And, you know, as we get older, we realize
And we long for the days when we knew everything. You know, the older you get, the less you realize you really know.
Yeah, right.
We all, yeah. We see strange
I like
things
that you said and, that and, because there's a difference of the wisdom is something you can't learn in a classroom. You know.
Yeah, you know, and when we're kids, we all tell a dirty joke that describes it perfectly. You know. Mm-hmm. Both the old bull and the young bull on right. the hill, where the young bull says, let's run down there and grab a few cows. And the old bull says, let's walk down and grab them all.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and we all think it's funny, but when you get older, you realize it's true. Like, right. there's a certain amount of wisdom in age. When I was in Korea and China, one of the things that I really I liked about their culture was they revere the older people.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the older you are, the more important you are, and they recognize the wisdom, and, you know, that's why, you know, they revere the old sage here, you know, whereas in our you know, I mean, in our society, it's they can't wait to put you somewhere where they don't have to see you when you get old, you know?
Yeah, it's really terrible.
And, yeah, it is. It's you know, you're making a big mistake by not listening to the old people, really. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, listen, and don't get me wrong. I know all the dumb kids at school grew up to be dumb adults, you know. And but I'm sure that even they grab a certain amount of wisdom if they make it, you know.
Yeah.
So.
One thing good about our program and the way it's starting to develop a little bit is I realize when I have you people, it's all guys that are, well, how do you say this? You have made every penny that you have made. You haven't earned like a paycheck. It's a difference. See? So you're like self-made. You made these experiences, right? And that's a whole different university than... going to work 9 to 5, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the school of hard knocks.
Well, every day you wake up unemployed, right, in a way, and you got to go, what am I going to put together today, or what am I going to do today that's going to get me to the goal of paying my mortgage, you know, or whatever it is. Way different, you know?
Well, you know, I watched a video the other day, and it was almost like an epiphany. And, you know, we work to pay our debts, and we, you know, we have to do these things that, you know, there's things we want to do, but they come only after the things that we have to do.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of, they've figured out a way to jimmy us into this kind of slavery.
Right. You're on a hamster wheel, I call it, you know?
Yeah, because somebody the other day told me, or on this video I was watching, the one guy was said to the other guy, he says, do you understand what the government does when they need money is they print it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we have inflation. But they said, but stop and think about it. Like, why can't they just print enough money to cover our debts and not worry about anybody else?
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, and why are we paying taxes if they can just print money?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, don't start, man.
Yeah, but I mean, stop and think about that. Like, why do we pay taxes if they can just print money?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Like if you really cared about your citizens, I mean, I understand that you have to have a certain amount of inspiration to go to work. You have to, you know, there has to be something that motivates you. We all need motivation in one way or the other. And unfortunately, most of us are motivated by debt.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. But at the same time, you know, if you stop and think about the system they set up, you know, they're basically keeping us in this situation, not by necessity, but by choice.
Yeah, and then they had it set up. I tell my kid for a while, they had it where they figured out, I call it 60,000, right? Like back in 20, 30 years, like they had you making enough where you could buy a house, get a boat, you know, go hunting, go living, and all of that. And so you were playing the game, right? But then... Yeah. That doesn't work no more, see, you know, and,
oh, no,
you know, so you can't,
well,
yeah,
well, they've got think tanks, every corporation and everybody has a think tank that says, how much expendable money do people have?
Yeah.
Oh, they have, you know, like they'll say 30% of their money is expendable, like just to, you know, grab a number out of the air. The problem is that you've got 20 different corporations thinking that that 30% is theirs. Well,
yeah, pretty soon it's
way, way, way over a few hundred percent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Like I add my taxes up, it's 110% now, Ken. So.
Well, I wanted to buy a truck, and so I decided to find out, you know, because listen, if there's a province, you know, in Canada, like in the Maritimes, where people are poor, mm-hmm. you know they're going to charge less for the same truck over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Try going on the internet and getting that price. You can't. You have to put in your zip code.
Yeah.
The only way you can find out what the price is if you know somebody over there, and you phone them and you get them to go down and get a quote for you, and then they phone you back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they've got the whole system jimmy rigged so that if you're in a rich province, you're going to pay a rich price.
Absolutely.
A rich state, you know, and like it's bad enough to get up in the morning and have to worry about, you know, going to the bathroom by 10 o'clock without having to worry about all these think tanks that got their hands in your pocket, you know?
Yeah. Well.
But anyways, I guess that's for the price of wisdom. You understand these things. I guess it's just as much of a curse as it is a blessing.
It is. Because you wonder why people don't take it to the next step. But, hey, now I'm go ahead.
Go ahead, ask me a question.
I wanted to segue to my favorite subject of Sasquatch, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, now, I had this all set up, but then I got stumped last night when I watched this thing on the Yeti. But anyway, my first question, I thought about this, was because I believe we had experiences, other people we know, credible.
Mm-hmm.
What would do you say to skeptics that just, you know, think you're insane? You know, how do you reasonably?
Well, you got to kind of step back from the whole situation of a skeptic. Mm-hmm. You know, you almost have to do a survey. Like somebody says, you're crazy, you're full of crap. And I say, okay, why am I crazy? Well, how can you believe there's a big, stinky, hairy man running around in the woods? Mm-hmm. And I said, have you ever seen one? And they say, no, of course I never seen one. And I said, well, you're not really somebody, like, you know, no disrespect, but you're not really somebody I want to talk to about this. I said, I understand. You know, and I say no disrespect, but the reason I don't want to talk to you about it is because you know nothing about the subject. Because, first of all, you deny it. And in that Tucker Carlson video, he said denial is the strongest of human traits. Mm. And I said, you know, I said, now, if you were a guy who would deny it to the grave, and suddenly you saw one, I said, now you are exactly the guy I want to talk to.
Yeah.
I said, most of those guys I have a hard time even getting it out of them. And I said, and they exist in great numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I used to find them when I had that Sasquatch model in my shop. Like I gave it to Dan, who made the movie, because he spent so much of his own money making the movie. I just gave him the model. I'm going to make another one. But when I had it sitting there, I had people come in and they'd say, hey, buddy, come over, look at this. Ah, you know, and that's the reaction I expect. And I go over there and I say something like, yeah, it's amazing what you can shoot in the garbage dump out at Drayton Valley. But you know, just I kind of joke along with them. But every now and then I'd have somebody walk up to it and they'd just stop and they'd look at it. Their face would just be stone. Mm-hmm. Then they would turn around and they would walk away. Same stone-faced expression. And I could see the wheels turning like they were trying very hard to forget what they just looked at.
Wow.
And I would, those guys, I would say, whoa, whoa, not so fast, buddy.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you've seen one of those. And they'd say, what, you know. And I'd sit there, it took me half an hour, I'd get it out of them. And I got some of the most amazing stories from hunters of close-up encounters with Sasquatches from that model telling me that they'd seen one, whereas I would never have known in 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stories were all the same. And one guy was in here with his friend. I was doing a cougar for his friend. And One guy was laughing at me. The other guy had that same reaction.
Yeah.
And I got him to tell me and his friend of a close-up encounter west of the city here that he had. And his friend's face just dropped. And I said, is your buddy a liar? He said, no, my buddy would never lie. He goes, but why hasn't he told me this? I hunt with him every year all the time. Spent all my time with this guy.
Yeah.
And so he turned around and he said to his friend, he says, now, you're going to listen to me and you're going to listen to me very carefully. He says, the story I just told you, you are not going to work in telling the guys because I get to work together. He says, under no circumstances are you to breathe. And he made him swear to silence right there in my shop. And he's nodding his head. And I said, I told my friend, his name was Trevor. I said, you walk away from here, I said, and I want you to think very carefully about what just happened. I says, and if you want to know more, call me or get online and just start snooping. Just start snooping, you know, some of these sites, and you'll find out that almost all of the stories corroborate with what your friend just said here.
Yeah.
And I said, so, okay. But I had a talk here a few weeks ago with a very important government official who just happens to be a friend of mine. He is in a position to know.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He asked me a question. So I sat and I told him, you know, I have a little thing laid out if somebody of importance ever breaches the subject with me. And he sat there and listened to me expressionless, never laughed at me, never rolled his eyes. He listened very, very intently to what I had to say. And what I did tell him was this, is I said, look, if this creature exists, I said, my first thing I told people is if it's out there, hunters are seeing it. If hunters are not seeing it, it does not exist.
Yeah.
And so when I started canvassing hunters and people like yourself, uh-huh. I got stories like, oh my gosh, not only are they seeing them, they're seeing them in great numbers, but you'll never find a more secretive group of people about their experiences than hunters.
Absolutely.
And we're on the inside. We're like the hairdressers, you know, the taxidermists. We deal with all the hunters. We hear the stories. We hear the rumors. We hear the scandals. You know, we hear everything.
Yep.
So not only were hunters seeing them, they were seeing them in great numbers. I probably talked to more people who've seen a Sasquatch than have seen a Wolverine.
Wow, really?
I mean, that's just how it is. So the next thing I realized, because I took genetic evidence down to a friend of mine, another important guy who's now retired, who worked in the government, who was in a position to have genetic evidence tested. I gave him the evidence, and a year later, he told me that they had tested. I cornered him, and I could tell right away that his whole demeanor had changed.
Hmm.
He wasn't laughing, and he told me kind of quietly, like he said, it's pretty much off the record. But the DNA was extracted, and it was inconclusive, as it didn't match anything directly in GenBank.
Wow.
And I said, okay. And then a couple of years after he retired, he came into my shop, and before he left, he looked at me and he smiled. He says, I watch the news for you.
Uh-huh.
He says, every day I watch the news. I'm expecting sooner or later I'm going to see you. I'm going to uh-huh. see you on the news.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he said to me, and he walked out. Now, that's a pretty big statement coming from a guy who was in charge of the entire foothills of Alberta. So I came to the conclusion, I kind of regretted taking the genetic stuff in there, because I tell everybody, if this creature exists, like, you don't have to believe in it or not, but if it exists, there is knowledge they know about it. They have, you know, if I can find that thing, you know, running around on weekends, if I can find evidence, well, the people who spent their entire careers and lives out in the forest, they know about this. And I've always been a little bit leery of why is it being covered up? You know, why are they now from, you know, in the old days, you know, from the turn of the century type of stuff, it was a religious matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they called them demons. They called them, you know, fallen angels. And, you know, they had all of everything, you know, wrapped around mm-hmm. religion.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you would have to say that, you know, how could man be created in God's image if this thing exists and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know the story and you know the thinking. So
sometime or another, you know, the baton of religion was handled to the baton of money. Now everything revolves around money. So now you have billions of dollars of resources, you know, and in Alberta here, if there's 500 or less of a big mammal species in the woods, you can't drill a hole for oil or cut a tree until there's an environmental impact study done. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why the grizzly bear numbers remain at 750 officially, even though there's probably over 3,000 of them here. Mm-hmm. You know, so now it's there's a lot of incentive. Like, if all of a sudden these things were proven to exist by their own rules, they can't. We have to shut down all natural resources. By their own rules, and of course you have all of these eco groups that would love nothing more than to do that. So what I pitched to this government guy was, I said that if knowledge of this thing ever becomes public, it cannot be classified as an animal. It has to be given a whole new classification as relic hominid, or
right.
You know,
well, that's
or
what I believe it is anyway. So.
Yeah, and something that is intelligent enough to adapt to a clear cut, or know how to understand that it has to go walk around an oil rig, you know, that it has self-aware. And I told him, I said, the minute you shut down $1 billion worth of environmental or projects because of this, I said, you make it profitable to kill that creature. Mm-hmm. And I said, that cannot happen.
Yeah.
It can't be allowed to happen. I said, so it has to be given a special status. And one of the things is that once it is public knowledge, like once it's got a scientific name, then it cannot be used, because it's self-aware, it cannot be used by any special interest group to promote any agenda. And that has to be written into law. I said, because otherwise you make it profitable for oil people and forestry people and even hunters who can't go into their favorite hunting spot anymore.
Yeah.
It makes it profitable to them personally and financially to kill this creature. And so, you know, I'm not one of these eco-warriors that wants to shut down, you know, use this creature that just wants to be left alone to shut down projects in the forest, you know. It has to be something more special. It has to be something like an indigenous species of hominid that has inherent rights unto itself. And I was really glad I talked to this government guy, because, you know, if they do know about this, but judging by the expression on his face, he knew something.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden now, and I told him, I said, if you ever need a spokesman, stand up on a soapbox and say what I just did. I said, I'm your man. I said, I'll do it all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want people using this creature as a means to an end for their own stupid agendas, you know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting story. I haven't been out looking as much for the Sasquatch and evidence as I had in the past. The whole thing about there being knowledge of it kind of spooks me a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, there's a lot of people that consider me nothing more than a peon compared to a $1 billion industry.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to put myself into that situation. I don't want to be controversial with anybody or confrontational mm-hmm. Over this subject. It's kind of a hobby. But I did invest in a brand new Leica handheld thermal.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Like top of the line thermal camera. Like, it's, I got it in Europe, and I got it for about half the price that it sells for. It's about a $7,000 unit.
Wow.
It is absolutely amazing. I can focus right in and see hair on things in the dark, and I can zoom in and I press the button and I can videotape with it.
Wow.
So I'm going to do a little bit of camping this, mm-hmm. This summer, and my son is big time, and you know, we're going to go out and see if we can't just, you know, they like to come around and watch you in the night, mm-hmm. and but if with this thermal, if they're 100 yards back in the trees, I will see them, and I'll be able to
Finland, and I would like to do that. I would like to have that.
That's awesome. Just for your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Rudy had a good point, too, because you see a lot of videos. He said, none of that matters. Only one of them has to be right to prove it. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter if there's 100 fake videos or guys in gorilla suits or whatever.
Doesn't matter how real the footage is either, because if you, you know, I mean, with you know, AI and everything now, there are already hoaxes coming out that look so real. You know, that it's, and, but photographic evidence was never going to be conclusive, never, not in a million years. I had a biologist tell me very quietly and personally, because I showed him some stuff. He was quite enthralled, but he told me, he says, don't ever bother with DNA ever again. He says, don't, he says that that'll never prove anything. He says, you need either an entire body or at least the head.
Right. You told me a long time ago they're going to need a skull, to, you know, to sadly.
Yeah, and it's, it, yeah, he said, otherwise, he said, don't even attempt it. And he said, you have to have the whole thing. So, you know, I've got the word out there. And I've told people, and I, you know, if you ever come across something, don't phone anybody, don't tell anybody, bring it here. I said, I'm not going to take it from you, but I am going to advise you. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, Columbus wasn't famous when he, you know, and didn't make any money while he was sailing. It was only until he came back that he became famous. And I told everybody, I said, if you think you're going to make money or be famous, I said, you know, guess again. The whole thing has to come out and be corroborated and everything before you can even step forward and say a word of and gain any notoriety. But I've met a lot of people in this Bigfoot, you know, investigation world, and a lot of them I keep as far away from me as possible because you know, they know, you know, they realize this is real, and they also realize how famous and wealthy they could be if they could only prove it. But the problem is that's the wrong motivation.
Well, heck yeah.
Yeah, I've never made a penny from Bigfoot stuff. Like, I never made any money from the Bigfoot movie. I've never made a dime from Bigfoot or Sasquatch-related things. And I really can't think of any way I could, in all honesty, take somebody's money for this subject. But I'm sure that if one day I ever did drop a body off at the news station, you know, I might get a book deal. I'm not even going to think about it.
I mean, you know, your motives are not for fame. Your motives are to classify and protect the creek, you know.
Yeah.
That's your
motive. I just want...
Yeah,
my motive, I tell everybody, my motivation is I want to be the guy who sells the T-shirt that says, I told you so.
Yeah, yeah. But, and then that's going to lead me into this, okay? So I was watching this Yeti thing, right? And so I know you know these stories, but a lot of people might not. So in like 1937 in Russia somewhere, right, the army flushed that wild man, they call it, out of a cave. And it charged him, and they killed it. And anyway,
that was in Russia.
Yeah, that's what I mean, in Russia. Yeah, and they had told Stalin, but for some reason they couldn't get the thing back, right? And then, okay, I'll screw this all up, but I'll give him my best shot, me and numbers and stuff. Then later on, they actually captured one, right? And we're taking it back.
Okay.
And and then something happened. They had to kill that one too. But then, in 40, or after 40, like 47, they actually caught one and brought it back to Moscow, and examined it. Okay, this is all according to, you know, the commies. So who knows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Stalin's idea was to somehow make a super soldier out of them that would be obedient, you know. And the doctors. Mm-hmm. Notes that examined him, which, like I said, who knows, said that he tried to communicate with it, but it could only chirp and this and that, you know, and the eyes didn't have like the same amount of reasoning as our, you know what I mean, like when you look at it, and when he examined it and gave a report, and then he said he never saw it again. So
yeah The common story, like, they caught one in British Columbia. And they went on a boat. They put it on a boat to Europe because somebody there wanted it, and it was just a young one. I can't remember the name, but they had a name for it. Jocko, I think they called it Jocko. And it, when the boat arrived, it wasn't on the boat. But, you know, it only takes some person who's superstitious to throw the thing overboard. I mean, you know, there's so many stories. I personally know a number of people personally that have shot them. Now, you and I both have our mutual friend Justin, whose story became a somewhat of a circus. And I was involved in bringing that story to light, and the hoo-ha that ensued afterwards was such bullshit that I I basically I've uncovered other stories far better, for almost got some evidence from some of them, but you know, I'm just not even going to elaborate with you know, about them unless I have something to prove. But there's a lot of situations where hunters have shot them, and they are almost always retrieved. The bodies are retrieved by other ones. In almost every case that I've
found. They want to be left alone. Holy smokes!
Well, they're super intelligent, but also I've talked to people who've shot them that said that they were so resilient that they ran away. Now, when I was in Europe, I was in a very famous hunter's booth. They were selling hunts for markhor and Marco Polo sheep, and markhor hunts, you know, start at $100,000 US.
Wow.
And this group of guys, they were high rollers. There was an American guy sitting there, and somebody mentioned, they said, "You're the big fat guy." And anyways, I said, "Yeah, that's me." And you know, they were asking me questions about it. And then finally, this American guy sat up and he says, "Well, you guys can say whatever you want." He said, "But I shot one very close to the Alberta border in Montana." That's what he told. He said, "He just come out with this." He says, "And I hit him square." He said, "A big one." He says, "I searched everywhere." He said, "I shot it with my .338 Magnum, shot him square in the chest, and I could not find hide nor hair of that thing."
Wow.
And he said, "And I searched a long time." And he was like, "And you guys can say whatever you want, but it was a Sasquatch, and I shot it." And that was just sitting in Europe out of the blue. Now, I have another friend who lives actually here in town. Same thing. He saw a big one on the ground. It was eating berries up north of Fawcett Lake. And he said that he thought it was the biggest black bear in the world.
Wow.
So he shot it. And he says it jumped up, he says, and it put both hands on it and screamed and ran away. His uncle came and looked at the tracks, threw him in the truck, had left their camp and everything. They saw the blood and the footprints. And he wouldn't talk to him, left his favorite frying pan behind and everything.
Oh, wow.
And took him out. But I have another friend who was attacked by one because he got into a skirmish with a young one.
He accidentally
harmed the young one without realizing it. And he said that he fired his gun, 300 Magnum, over and over again. He said it was all he could do. He said it was the hardest thing he's ever killed. He says that when she was laying on the ground, he said she was, he ended up killing the small one too. And this is very similar to Justin's story, but I know this man personally, but unfortunately he passed away this summer. But he said that it was on the ground, he said, and it was, he described the size. He saw my model too, and he said, which was bang on. He said, my model was bang on, except for they all have different faces. He's seen a number of them now, or had seen. And he said that it had a pointed chin and more pointed head, so it had like a football. He said it was not an animal. He said it's a man. That's how he described it. He says, a type of man, but not us. He said, a very ugly, very hideous. And he said she was laying on the ground, and he said she was lactating because of the young one. He says, then the other one showed up. And he said it was the hardest thing he's ever killed. And anybody who's hunted monkeys or baboons in Africa know primates are the hardest thing to kill. Imagine, you know, one that weighs 1,000 pounds. So he said the big one showed up and it stepped out, the big male, and he said he was a dead man. He said there was no way that his
300 would stop it. That's how he said. So, which makes sense for all the ones that run away.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But he said it jumped behind the tree, looked at him. He says it turned and ducked and ran. He said there was a bunch of them, and they were all screaming. So he ran away, but he got scared, and he came back later because he said the animal or the creature, excuse me, was human enough that he said theoretically they could charge you with homicide for shooting one.
Wow.
He said it was that human, you know, not entirely human, but very, very close. So he wanted to get rid of it before somebody found it because he didn't want to be in that kind of trouble.
Oh, heck yeah.
And he said they were gone. The other ones had carried them off. And he said he followed them into the valley, he said, into the roughest stuff you've ever seen. And he says they buried them above ground in a huge mound. And he says they all left gifts around the mound, like sticks, rocks, bones. And if you think about it, gifting the dead is religion, which tells you something about how intelligent this creature is.
Wow.
And I had no reason. I mean, he never changed his story to the grave. He was not entirely certain that I knew the whole story either, because I had somebody close to him that recounted it mm-hmm. as well. But I knew the man very, very well. So, you know, I have no reason to doubt him, and he had no reason to lie. He just wanted to be, he wanted to be disassociated completely with the whole topic.
I bet.
Yeah, so that's, you know, and then there's another guy just up the road. He's passed away too, George Kelly. His brother shot one. He approached the children while they were out collecting pine cones and blueberries or whatever.
Wow.
They put pine cones for the forestry, and he shot it. And they, his brother George was an incredible tracker. He was a very famous outdoorsman here in Alberta, and he said they couldn't find it. It was actually his son that recounted it. But then the same other guy that I knew that knew him even better said that they did encounter it. But what happened was they were lured into an ambush, and there was a whole bunch of them waiting for them.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
When they were, and he, in his, the words I was told was, we almost didn't make it out.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And so these stories... And, you know, these old-timers, they die, and people, you know, don't corroborate these stories with anybody. They don't tell them. So many amazing things and pieces of evidence have gone to the grave with a lot of people.
Wow.
So I keep my investigations in the hunting community, but I also, I don't go out of my way to cause a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Because I'm not entirely sure of why this topic is being concealed. There might be something more to it that I don't know, and maybe if I knew the reason, I'd conceal it too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But until somebody tells me, I'm going to recount what I know, whether people believe me or not, and or what I learned. I'm going to give everybody an ear, whether their stories sound preposterous or not. I'm just going to hear them. You know, I'm not going to criticize anybody. I just want to know. And then I can take little pieces from each of the stories, and they can corroborate each other.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I do. And down the road, I may put this into a book. I really should, you know, if somebody wanted to collaborate with me, I would consider doing it. But I'm not really inspired to do such things like I used to be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, Ken, we've had a great time, and we could continue on for hours.
We sit here all damn day.
Yeah, but the audience only has so much ass time or something, you know, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
but
I get it.
We'll send you the link. It's going to come up a week from today.
It'll post up next
but
Tuesday. So.
For anybody that wants to find you or follow you, give us your information, please.
I have a Facebook site called Kenroy Walker Productions that kind of encompasses everything that I do.
Okay.
You know, whether it's my taxidermy forms or some Sasquatch stories or just some things. I'm trying to get to be a little bit more proactive with that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, I keep a pretty low profile in a lot of ways. But I'm, you know, I'm,
not as many people approach me as people think.
Yeah.
It's pretty quiet around here, so.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, you know, more along the lines, too, if we could promote your mannequins, you know, they can go there and find
you,
right? You know?
Yeah, I mean that sort of thing. I mean, you know how our industry is in taxidermy. It's pretty small. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of knows everybody, so, you know. But other than that, I'm still recording some music. I haven't released anything yet. I got to get some copyright.
Looking forward to hearing that.
Stuff like,
yeah. You know?
Yeah, well,
we were saying, we were bragging on you. You're multi-talented. Plus, you're hilarious, man. Sometimes.
Well, listen, it's been too long, my friend. You and I got to get together. Well, are you going to be at the World Championship?
Yeah, that's what I was asking you. Yeah, we'll be at the World Show. I can't wait to see you.
Well, I'll be there too, God willing, and we'll be very happy to see you. We'll have to sit down and have some fun.
Absolutely. We're going to do that, and then, like I said, we'll send you the link, but it is on demand and all that crap. Matt got that done. But I'll talk to you before then, Ken, all right?
Cool.
And thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, no worries. It's my pleasure, and it's good to hear from you guys, and you guys take care, okay?
All right. Yeah, you too.
Bye, Ken.
Okay. Yeah, bye-bye now.
All right.
Wow. That went a little long, but it's fascinating.
That took an interesting turn there at the end.
Yeah.
That's
Well, Levi ought to love that.
or he'll be scared shitless, one of the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Well, that just corroborates a lot of other stories you hear. It's like that primate doctor, that whatever her name is, she said, on its own, it's just like a twig.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But when you start compiling more, then it starts to become something. And then when you start to compile other experiences, and they all kind of have the same pattern, and you know how it works.
Absolutely.
Like six deer heads is that size is a pattern.
Yep.
Then it becomes the average for the area.
Yep.
Right?
Anyway. 100%.
Wow, what a good show.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Top that one. Well, Matt, talk us out of here, man.
Absolutely. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode. Be sure to follow us everywhere you get your podcast: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Check us out on social media at Butchershop Taxidermy, at Ojai_Valley_Taxidermy. And you heard where you can go find Ken.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We'll have a good one. We'll catch you on the next one.
Look forward to the next one. Out.